the church's music from the second century.
Shepherd of tender youth, guiding in love and truth.
The sixth century. The 12th century.
O come, O come, Emmanuel.
The 16th century.
Lord, keep us steadfast in your word. Help us to rightly seat us.
The 21st century. The best of the church's music from the past 2,000 years. LutheranPublicRadio.org.
He's forbidding a haughty and arrogant heart. He's forbidding boastfulness, that we judge for the sake of being judgmental, that we might become superior to others, that we would look down on others.
The tensions are not going to go away. And we're a Supreme Court decision or two away from the nation almost giving up on concepts of tolerance.
When he told them, touch my hands and my side, it wasn't simply proof that he was alive. If he who died for sin is alive, then my sin is taken care of.
I'm in favor of marriage equality. And what I mean by that is we should treat all marriages the same. We should treat all real marriages equally. But we still need to figure out what makes a relationship a marital relationship.
In about 10 minutes, we'll play Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. We'll play those four soundbites in their entirety. There's more to them than just what you heard. And after you've listened, you give us a call, 1-877-623-6943, and you vote for one of them to be Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week. In the meantime, we're going to talk about abortion and the Democratic presidential candidate Joe Biden's health care plan. The entire Democratic slate, 24, 25 people, with the exception of Biden, are calling for universal health care, or that is a socialized health care, Medicare for all is what they're calling it. Joe Biden says, no, Obamacare was good. Let's keep that. But the devil's in the details. What would Biden's health care plan do about abortion laws, in particular incremental pro-life laws? Joining us to answer some of those questions, Dr. Michael New, visiting assistant professor at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America. He's associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Biden's Healthcare Plan Demonstrates His Extremism on Abortion. Dr. New, welcome back.
Thanks for having me.
Why is candidate Biden on the issue of healthcare breaking with the Democratic field?
I think because health care is an issue that's important to many Democratic primary voters and a lot of its competitors for the Democratic Party's presidential nomination, including Bernie Sanders, are getting a lot of attention for their plans, especially the Sanders Medicare for All plan. And I think to counter that, Biden felt the need to release his own plan, which he did earlier this week.
The devil being in the details, what is in Biden's plan that demonstrates his abortion extremism?
Well, there's several things. I mean, a lot of the plan contains kind of several kind of boilerplate items you'd expect from most Democrats. He wants to codify Roe v. Wade into federal law. He wants to fund Planned Parenthood. He reiterates his opposition to the Hyde Amendment, which prevents federal taxpayer dollars from paying for abortion. But what's interesting about his plan is that if you read it carefully, he indicates that if he's elected president, he wants the U.S. Department of Justice to actively oppose various incremental state-level laws. These include parental involvement laws. These include waiting periods. These include clinic regulations. These laws enjoy, you know, very broad public support. And it's interesting, this plan of his makes it clear that he opposes these incremental protective pro-life laws.
Does that make it go beyond even the Affordable Health Care Act?
It's really hard to say. I mean, quite honestly, I think this is position-taking and grandstanding. I mean, it's really not clear what the Department of Justice could actually do under a Biden administration. I mean, these laws have been upheld by the Supreme Court several times. So it's not really clear what exactly President Biden would do about these incremental pro-life laws. But I think it shows he's really trying to pander to Democratic primary voters, trying to support legal abortion. He's now on the record opposing incremental laws that are popular. And I think that Republicans and President Trump should make this a campaign issue in 2020.
You speculate that he and his campaign are overreacting. What to what?
Well, he had an exchange with Kamala Harris at the first debate that frankly didn't go over well, and I think may have exposed some weaknesses in the candidate. And I think that what he's concerned about is that, frankly, liberal primary voters might be looking at Kamala Harris or other candidates. So I think he feels he has attack left on some issues, especially social issues like abortion, to kind of shore up his support amongst a lot of political liberals who vote in these Democratic primaries.
Where does his proposed plan, especially vis-a-vis abortion, where does it compare with public opinion on these incremental pro-life laws?
Well, frankly, I mean, I think this may help him during the Democratic primaries a little bit because, frankly, people who vote in Democratic primaries have liberal views on abortion, but it will clearly hurt him in the general election. I mean, there's just a big body of polling data showing that a lot of incremental pro-life laws, like limits on taxpayer funding for abortion, parental involvement laws, waiting periods, poll after poll shows that 50, 60, sometimes even pushing 70% of voters support these laws. So this really will come back and hurt him should he be the Democratic Party's nominee in 2020.
What are your concerns about the alternative being proposed, as you mentioned before, by pretty much everyone else in the Democratic field for president? That is essentially health care for all, socialized health care. What are your concerns there?
Well, I think there's a lot of reason to be concerned. I mean, first off, it's just very expensive. I mean, providing health care for everybody would, frankly, or guarantee universal health care would certainly increase the tax burden. Essentially, if you go with a Medicare for all plan, like Bernie Sanders describes, you lose private health insurance. People wouldn't necessarily be able to select an insurance plan that suits their needs well. I think there'd be just less choices. There might be, in some cases, even rationing, where certain people may not be able to get health care in certain circumstances because certain other people or certain other conditions are prioritized. I think there's quite a lot for folks to worry about.
I guess what I'm wondering is there seems to be, at least in Washington, the divide between those who would like to see Obamacare, for to use its kind of colloquial moniker, go away. And then there are those who are pushing so hard the other direction, including candidate Biden. How do you see this shaking out, especially when it comes to the issue of abortion and whether or not insurance premiums would be paying for abortions?
I think the one smart thing Biden is doing is not coming out in favor of Medicare for all. I think that a lot of people like their own private health insurance. A lot of people are pretty happy with the quality of health care they provide, and they don't want the system turned up on its head. You know, they might support some incremental things to help low-income earners, but they don't want to lose their own insurance. So I think that is one thing Biden's doing that's smart. You know, I think that health care reform has been kind of a back-channel way for a lot of Democrats to try to increase the amount of support for abortion. You know, I think a lot of concern about both the Affordable Care Act in the 2000s and the proposed Clinton health care plan in the 90s is that insurance plans would be required to cover abortion. And we know from good data that if abortions are free or heavily subsidized, their numbers go up. So I think that's something that pro-lifers need to be well aware of. We don't want a situation where everybody is lumped into a health care plan where abortions are subsidized by the federal government, meaning your taxpayer dollars. I think it's something we need to be very well aware of as the debate over health care reform continues.
If there were a single payer and it were to cover abortion, which it inevitably would that in effect amount to taxpayer-funded abortion?
Yeah, essentially a single-payer plan means the government is paying everybody's health care bills. And essentially one other problem is that the decision about whether or not to cover abortion wouldn't probably be handled through the democratic process. It would be handled through kind of administrative fiat. And that doesn't bode well for us. I mean, I'll take our chances with democracy. I think people get to vote. They would not want their taxpayer dollars to pay for abortion. But if it's being decided by an HHS appointee or a bureaucrat, that's problematic. You might well see abortion being covered. So again, pro-lifers need to be kind of well aware that health care reform has always been, I think, a back-channel way our opponents have tried to require taxpayers to cover things like abortion.
On the other side of the political spectrum, with President Trump running, what do we know of his plan vis-a-vis health care and abortion?
Well, it's not really clear that President Trump has laid out a clear health care plan for 2020, but we know he's been very solid on the life issue. I mean, he has strengthened and expanded the Mexico City policy, which prevents taxpayer dollars from funding abortion overseas. His judicial appointments have been very good. I mean, a lot of abortion policy is frankly being handled in the courts. And I think that both the Supreme Court nominees and its appointees for lower courts, that's important too, have been very good on this issue. So I think that pro-lifers have a lot of reason to be happy with President Trump. I mean, Mexico City policy has been good. Judicial appointments have been good. He's limited the ability of Planned Parenthood to get certain kinds of federal taxpayer dollars. I think pro-lifers should be pretty satisfied with him.
Regardless of who runs against him, if Trump is beat in 2020, what do you predict in terms of health care and abortion and all the policies you just mentioned?
Well, I think it's going to be a very salient issue. I think with the Supreme Court changing, you're going to see states like Alabama and Georgia and Missouri passing protective laws. So I think the salience of this issue is very high. I think pro-lifers need to be prepared going into this election. But I also think that, you know, we're in a good position, too. The Trump administration has a good track record. I think we've made some gains in the court of public opinion. And again, I think that, you know, the fact that Democrats, I think, really are overplaying their hand when it comes to this issue. I think that we have a lot of ammunition to hit them with. Most people don't want their taxpayer dollars paying for abortions, especially elective abortions. Most people support parental involvement laws, waiting periods, limits on late term abortion. I think Democrats really are overreaching, and pro-lifers can take advantage of that.
Dr. Michael New is visiting assistant professor at the Bush School of Business at the Catholic University of America. He's associate scholar at the Charlotte Lozier Institute and author of a recent column for The Federalist titled Biden's Healthcare Plan Demonstrates His Extremism on Abortion. You can read it at issuesetc.org. Click On Demand Archives. Dr. New, thank you very much.
Thanks for having me.
We'll be playing Issues Etc. Soundbite of the Week for the remainder of the program live this Friday, July the 19th. We got four soundbites, one from Dr. Peter Scare, one from Terry Mattingly, one from Pastor Peter Bender, and one from Dr. Ryan Anderson right after this.
Come and experience firsthand by sitting down in classes and actually hearing professors. Coming to chapel, which is always the high point of the day, to hear the word of God and to lift our voices in song.
Issues Etc. regular guest Dr. Paul Grimm on why you should consider visiting Concordia Theological Seminary in Fort Wayne, Indiana.
Spend time talking to professors. I mean, there's not a professor here who will not be willing to take time, whether it's after chapel during the coffee hour or just to come into one study and sit down and talk for a while, to answer questions, to, you know, help them to get a sense of A, you know, do they want to be a pastor or a deaconess? And then B, is this the right place? And, well, maybe C would be the question, is now the right time for them to make that decision?
If you've contemplated the vocation of pastor or deaconess, contact Concordia Theological Seminary, Fort Wayne, Indiana, 1-800-481-2155, 800-481-2155, or send an email to admission@ctsfw.edu.
Spiritual and religious. You're listening to Issues Etc.
Many Lutheran pastors outside of the U.S. receive little or no seminary education. Luther Academy provides theological triage through conferences, books, and journals. Help support Luther Academy by making a tax-deductible donation at lutheracademy.com or call 260-452-2211. Serving Lutheran pastors to the ends of the earth. Luther Academy, 260-452-2211 or lutheracademy.com.
Memoria Press now offers 8 levels of the Simply Classical curriculum for children with special needs. These full-year packages help you teach reading, writing, arithmetic, art and music, poetry, science, history, Latin, classical and Christian studies in incremental and multisensory ways for mastery. Visit classicalspecialneeds.com and enter promo code LPR9 to save on resources for your home or school.